tiny in all that air. The Philip Larkin Society Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Tiny in All That Air, the Philip Larkin Society podcast. My name is Lynn Lockwood. So this has been a momentous anniversary year, and what better way to end it than a chat with three of our Larkin 100 trustees. You'll already be familiar with Graham Chesters and Phil Pullen, and we're also joined by teacher, writer and poet Vicky Foster, who has a very particular connection to Hull and the work of Philip Larkin. No poetry analysis today, I'm afraid, but do head over to the Philip Larkin Society YouTube page and have a look at what's on there. I particularly loved the video shot by Phil and previous guest writer Chris Hewitt, with Chris reading his beautiful new poem about Philip Larkin called Cancellation.
Well, if we thought about what our expectations were 3 years ago, I guess they were pretty high. I think we'd started with the idea that we wanted to make this Larkin 100 a whole year happening, and with the idea that we would try and reach as many Larkin-related places as possible. And I thought that was really likely to happen because we wouldn't have to go right across the world to do this, because Larkin's world is very smaller than that. But yeah, you know, we thought we could certainly achieve it and get down as far as Sark, which was the furthest south he'd feel comfortable with. Actually, I had ideas that we might even reach Germany and reflect on the 1930 holiday trips that he made with his family. And we'd get, you know, as far as Scotland, we'd get across to Belfast. That was the big one for me, because we'd never done stuff before. And then also, I suppose, we hope that we would be able to be a key part of Coventry City of Culture Year, because it was so exciting to hear the announcement that Coventry was going to take over from Hull as City of Culture, you know, given the obvious Larkin links between the two cities. And it was, seemed to me, just perfect, given we've got the centenary year coming up, that we could be part of that. And we've been very disappointed by that, and by the fact that just as we'd got planning, got going on all of that, the pandemic happened, lockdown happened, and then we had to try and pick up steam again. And then we had a real struggle with funding. I mean, I think that's been the most frustrating thing. And, you know, we're sitting here now reflecting on that. And I know, Lynn, when you asked us about putting this together and thinking and to think about our highlights, there was a real chance that there wouldn't be any. You know, that we're so lucky to be in a situation where we can choose highlights, because somehow we've managed to badge over 40 events this year that are, you know, Larkin 100 events that have either been run by PLS or put together by Larkin 100 or put together by other people, and we've, you know, been promoting them and taking part in them. So at the end of the day, I think we've ended up with something that at one point we didn't think we'd ever achieve. So it's been a long journey, but ultimately I think it's been a great one, and I think there's lots we can talk about in terms of where we go from here as well. Yeah.
When did you have your first Larkin 100 meeting? Can you remember?
Oh, gosh. I know it would have been at the university. And some of the personnel, I guess it would have been sometime in 2019. Might have been earlier than that. I really can't remember that. But
yeah,
I know the personnel have changed since then. You know, people who were working at the university who were going to be part of the Larkin 100 have moved on. Similarly with the History Centre, you know, Simon Wilson's role there, and Simon was key in the early stages. But thankfully, we also then got involved with Claire Weatherall as the archivist, and they've been great. And the city council, you know, we were involved with people from city council. Again, the personnel changed there. So we did start planning a good 3 years before the event.
Yeah. The personnel on the Philip Larkin site has changed as well,
yes,
hasn't it? And people have got different plans for the future and have, you know, it's a kind of post-COVID world. We've all had a chance to sort of reflect on where we are. And, it's been a... Definitely, well, I don't want to use too much of a cliche, but a roller coaster is definitely a good way to describe it this year, because there's been times where things have been really smooth and then other times where we've just been a little bit bewildered as what we were going to do next.
Yeah.
Vicky, when you got involved, what were your thoughts about Larkin 100 when you first got involved?
So I came along, I think you'd already been having meetings, if you're talking about 4 years before the centenary, you'd been having meetings for quite a while before I became involved. But I think I joined you in the autumn winter of 2020, so like 2 years ago. And I was just really excited and intrigued by it, I think. It was like, we had some really, I remember us having actually some... like quite heated conversations in the beginning about what we all thought should happen. And that was, I think that was really, really useful and exciting, because I think out of that, we came up with some really interesting ideas and went off in different directions. And I think it's been, I feel like I've been on like a really big journey this year, and I've learned loads about Larkin, and I feel like I've developed this kind of relationship with him that I didn't have before. Like, and I know it's not about me, but for me personally, that's been quite interesting. It's been, it's been a really fascinating process to be involved in. It's been brilliant. I've loved it. I've loved this last year. I've loved the last couple of years. It's been a great thing to be part of.
Oh, that's great. And you're going to keep in touch with us going forward?
I meant to do it on Saturday, but I'm about to become, I feel a bit bad saying this, I feel like I should probably have been a member of the Larkin Society before that, but I wasn't, but I am going to become one. Notice it's a very reasonable price for students, so I'm going to spend this week.
Oh, it's great, because you've been such a great sort of link to Hull for us and to, like, you know, poetry kind of actually... Yeah. In production and poetry and performance and just communicating with people, and you've got that really strong voice for the people of Hull, but, you know, across the country as well. And I think I'm so pleased that you've been able to be so involved with it.
I think Vicky's been fantastic, and I think, you know, when she came along, it brought us a new dimension, because we really needed creative people. To have fresh ideas about Larkin. And I think from what you've just said, Vicky, that's very much what has happened. And, you know, the fact that it stimulated you to do other stuff around Larkin and found new things in Larkin is exactly what we wanted Larkin 100 to do. It wasn't just about, you know, commemorating what he'd done in the past and poetically. It's about how do we use that to generate new poetry and new writing. And the conference, well, I'm sure we'll be talking about later on, was a really good sort of indication of what can happen in that respect.
I think it's like what's been interesting for me, and I think it's a thing that as people who live in Hull, we maybe don't often think about, but Larkin is like this ever constant presence, I think. And I think the other writers that I speak to in the city feel like that, but he is sort of something that's always in your peripheral vision. So it's been quite interesting to like focus in on him a bit more and think about what his influence has been. And speaking to Douglas, to Sean O'Brien, at that night that we had the anniversary of A Rumoured City, was all those conversations were really interesting for me, because it's like Larkin was right at the beginning of something that's spread out over the last 50 years, 60 years. So, yeah, it's really interesting.
Great, Graham. Just an overview from you, like from when we started planning. I just get this image of the agendas in the committee meetings, and Larkin 100 gradually got higher and higher of the agenda and bigger writing. And then it was actually here. But looking back, Graham, is this what you wanted of the year?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think we actually started meeting in 2018 in a rather informal way, Phil, and then which I started convening, but I made a decision that I couldn't do the equivalent of what I did in 2010 with Larkin 25. After which my wife said, if you ever do anything like that again, Graham, I'll divorce you. So that's one good reason to hand it over to Phil. And it was post City of Culture year. So it seemed a good way of focusing the mind on something big, because I think the city itself, people in the council and in the cultural area had always been, during and leading up to the City of Culture, they'd always been asked, this isn't the end, it's the beginning, you've got to think of other ideas further down the line. So I remember writing a paper on the happy coincidence, really, of Andrew Marvel, quarter centenary being in 2021 and Larkin in 2022. And shouldn't there be council-level planning to celebrate this? Because as we heard at the recent conference, the corporation, I think it was then, in 1921, really pushed the boat out for Andrew Marvel 300th anniversary. And I thought, well, they ought to do the same, but link it with Larkin as well, especially as we heard that Larkin wrote a beautiful and very funny essay on Marvel. So that was the kind of seeds of it. I suppose the model of Larkin 25 is bound to be in my head, but the funding background had changed, not just because of and the pressures, not just because of COVID. So it wasn't a terribly useful model, as it turned out, but that really didn't matter. The thing I remember about 2010 is being told by the city council that the 200,000 they'd put to one side for us for the Larkin with toads had been withdrawn half an hour before I was going to be interviewed on the radio about it. And when they asked me what I felt about losing £200,000, I said, we'll just have fewer toads and we'll go to businesses. And that rejection really did spur us to go and seek sponsorship. We were told by those who've been around looking at arts in the city that we wouldn't get any sponsorship. It would be ridiculous asking for 3,500 or whatever it was. We were overwhelmed with sponsorship in the end. So getting rejections of funding from the Arts Council to do with Larkin 100, sometimes it really spurs you to think, okay, we're not going to rely just on the public purse. We're going to do something slightly different. And I think that's what happened here.
Yeah, I think so.
We got some money from the city council,
which was great.
Which was very good. And we got some money from the James Reckitt Library Trust to try and support the centenary events. And the university's put some money in kind. It's amazing what one can do, and working with partners like Hull Truck and the university and city libraries can achieve an awful lot. So I suppose, to answer your question, going back to the very beginning, like Phil said, it was meant to be of the volume and scale of Larkin 25, but nationwide.
Yeah.
And I think the nationwide bit has been achieved in spades. It's been phenomenal, thanks to Phil, mainly. What I was pleased to hear, though, is you know, Vicky saying that the kind of journey she's been on since joining us late 2020, not the exciting skills development of being a trustee, but the knowledge and familiarity that's grown with Larkin's work. And I think one of the great achievements of the whole centenary for me is the way in which Larkin has been viewed by a whole variety of people, not just, you know, given my background, I tend to think of how many academics are involved, how many articles have been published, what the main books coming out, and how popular is he in schools and, you know, the next generation of English students, which is not the way at all that Larkin would have seen it. You know, he will be much more interested in hearing Vicky sit down at the Whaleburn and have a discussion about here or something like that. And active poets. And it's terrific. I thought the audience at the recent conference was so eclectic. That made it a joy. And I'm sure Phil, on his visits around and talks, he's not been giving talks to academics.
He's been,
well,
a mix.
A real mix, yeah. So it's Larkin being alive in a cultural discussion, the broader cultural discussion.
I think there's been a few things that have happened this year that have really brought that to the forefront in my mind. And one of them was Keir Starmer quoting Larkin after the Queen died. And the other one was there was a brilliant TV series on the BBC this year called Alma's Not Normal, which is like so up to date. It's about working class northern women and the struggles that they face. And at one point, one of the characters stands up and recites this bit of verse. And I was like, wow, like that's, I think it's like, to me, that's as important that, you know, a poet that appears in those places is, you know, succeeding in ways that people who are maybe only discussed by academics isn't. It's like a sign of holding relevance, isn't it, and a sign of people from all kinds of backgrounds engaging with his poetry.
I think that's an important point. I mean, we didn't actually have to force Larkin into the national consciousness this year, did we, in that way? I mean, that Keir Starmer moment was pretty amazing, because, you know, I happened to be watching the Parliament Channel at that time, and suddenly for it to appear out of nowhere almost was great. But, you know, we always hope that there would be things in the media about Larkin that would be reflective of the year. And we'll come on to highlights in a minute, but the fact that Simon Armitage eventually did that program, in a sense, looking at Larkin in a new light, or the light of 2022, was massive, I think, ultimately. And it did engage. It did show how it engages with people. His poetry engages with people still today, which is what we wanted to have identified, I think.
Yeah. The Simon Armitage program was really good, and also the Radio 3 program that featured the different
the essay
poets,
programs.
That was amazing as well.
Yeah.
So we were really lucky that we got so much engagement. When you think about anniversary of the Wasteland this year, and I, you know, and I love the Wasteland, and I think it's got a lot of kind of popular awareness, even if people perhaps haven't read it in any great detail. But I didn't feel very, I didn't really feel like very aware of it in the media through much of the year at all.
Even less Amos, so I thought.
Even less Amos, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And I think there's one thing we probably, one positive that in a way has come out of all the lockdown experiences and so on is that we got to grips with new technology, really, or new technology for the society anyway. I mean, the fact that we're doing this on Zoom at the moment is reflective of how we've kept together and how the majority of our Larkin 100 meetings took place. But it also meant that we could ourselves reach that wider audience. You know, the audience that we're connected to, for example, through the membership and through Twitter as well, in terms of engagement, social media. So we've had one or two events, haven't we, this year, which have been online. Well, not only this year, but last year too. And that's enabled people from right across the world to take part in this, which is another thing we hope to do. So that was a good thing coming out of the experience, I think.
Yeah, I think this year's been a really good mixture of online and in-person events. And obviously events on you know, social media and the BBC, etc., which has meant the reach has just basically been global.
Yeah,
I think something that's felt really special to me this year, and it's come out of the fact that there was no big funding forthcoming from the Arts Council or anywhere else. What that means is that people have stepped forward who really are genuine Larkin fans and have said, well, actually, you know, there might not be much money, but actually I want to do this because just because I love Larkin and it's, you know, and I want to celebrate that. And in some ways that might be, it might be nicer that it's happened that way around, because it's felt like every time there's been an event, there's been conversations, it's felt really authentic and genuine and warm, like people are there because they really, you know, they just love his poetry, which I think is about the purest form of, you know, it's what any writer would want, isn't it? I imagine, like, it's, you know, not because someone's paying you loads of money so you've said you'll turn up and do it because but you're not that interested. It's like they're there because they really, you know, they really feel like they've got something to say, there's something to share about Larkin. I think that's really nice.
I think it's a good example of that is DJ Roberts.
And
he's putting his it's on at London at the moment, isn't it?
It is,
of his show. And then you get people in Coventry, like the Stoneleigh Church lecture too. Nobody from Larkin 100 or Larkin Society prompted. It was just self-starting. And the same is true of Daniel Wayne's production of Larkin with Women in London. And there must be other examples of that where people have just done it on their own, told us about it, and we've tried to boost the publicity and so on.
Yeah. I think that's
an awful lot more going on that we haven't heard about. I would imagine reading groups, reading one of his novels, or know, teachers bringing the poems into classrooms and things. Yeah. I'm sure there'll be lots of lovely things happening all through the year.
I think that's true. I mean, it was a model that we, you know, that was the sort of core of the model, really, that we would try and engage other people and say, well, why don't you do something for this? That was the only way, pandemic or no pandemic, that we were going to really stretch across the country. And I think it's an approach that we ought to continue with, really. And we'll get better at capturing what other people are doing. As we get to better known, then I think there's more scope for that.
And it just made me think about David Jones, the Viz cartoonist, you know, he put that cartoon on. Yeah. And he had done that a few years ago, I think, but just for himself, just for fun. And then when he put it on Twitter for the anniversary, it just got a lot of really good responses. And that's when we got in touch with him. So, again, a really good example of somebody just doing it from his own enthusiasm and joy of Larkin and Larkin's poetry. And yeah, it's been a really lovely connection to make. And I like the fact we've got a Viz cartoonist amongst our in our fold now. So I think in terms of the podcast, I had a look on Anchor, which is where we upload the podcast, and they're owned by Spotify. So Spotify love throwing lots of statistics at you. I'm sure lots of people have had their Spotify playlists and everything this December. But it's really good, actually, all the statistics about the podcast. We've made 559 minutes of content this year, which is...
Oh.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's a lot.
It's a lot, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
We've reached 27 countries around the world, the top being obviously the UK and the America. We have increased our followers, and the number of followers really started to go up after the John Robbins and Robin Allender podcast, and it seems that quite a number of people started listening with that podcast and have continued to listen. So that's really good. I don't know how they get these statistics, but apparently 76 people have told us that Tiny is their number one podcast.
Really?
76, unless that's just me. I've clicked it lots and lots of times by but yeah, so everything's gone up. Our listenership, our numbers of plays, the countries that we reach, the hours of content, it's all increased. So it's just great, and it's really great that there was one of the people at the conference last week came up to me and said, "I recognise your voice from the podcast."
Yeah. That's what people talk to us about more than anything. I think when you meet people who are, aware of the Larkin Society, they'll say, "Oh, I really enjoy the podcast."
So yeah.
It's been so good for us.
It's reached so many people. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Interesting. I haven't got all those kind of statistics for the Twitter, which now stands at followers 4,350. But what's been interesting since Elon Musk took over is that we had, for the first time that I ever remember, a conspicuous fall in the number of followers. People have taken against his attitude and so on. So we lost about 30 followers. But within the last fortnight, we've gained another 65, which is extraordinary. I mean, it's all to do, no doubt, with the 2nd of December events in various places and the number of tweets that were attached to that. That's great. I mean, the other thing I think... while we're talking about technology and social media, is the development of the YouTube channel, which Phil has led on, and it's a great legacy for the year. The various things you've put on that.
Yeah, I won't give any stats for that at the moment because they're very low. But I mean, I think it's to grow. I mean, we started the YouTube channel very sort of tentatively, I suppose, and experimentally. But there's quite a lot on there now, and people have certainly shown interest in it. It's a way of reaching those Larkin places that we talked about earlier. So I've done some of the presentations from various Larkin places. I've got some more to put up from there that I haven't edited yet. But and we will add some of the conference papers where people were happy to be filmed, and I think that will be of considerable interest as well. So we're at the early grounds of that, but I'm hoping next year that that's one of the areas we can start to really expand on and do very differently, because you can do quite a lot of different things with YouTube as well. And I think it allows us to have that kind of educative feature as well as just being of general interest to people. I'm sure some of the things we've already put up and others we will do will be of interest to those who are studying Larkin.
Mm. Yeah, and we've had an appetite from members for a while to put, events online or live stream and things like that. And it's always been quite difficult for us in terms of technology. But now we've got that option that we can actually get events onto YouTube. As long as we've got everybody's permission, and it'd be great to see some of the talks up there and to be able to read some of them if we get them into About Larkin, and I'd love to go and listen to them again, because to be honest, it was quite, there was such a range.
Sure.
There was a lot to take in over 2 days.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I've watched quite a since I did the recordings, I've watched quite a few of them back, and I've picked up much more from the watching than I did at the time, because I was more concerned about whether the camera was turning or whether it was, the sound was recording or whatever. And it's been good also that we've had Larkin Society members and others, who've contributed bits and pieces for the YouTube channel. And I would encourage, more of that. And I'd also encourage people to subscribe, because if you subscribe, you get to know what's coming up, and it helps to spread our presence on there. So we've got, I think we've probably only got about, how many subscribers we have at the moment? It's about 120 or something like that.
Yeah.
So it needs to build and build and build. And hopefully it will next year.
Yeah, it's the same for the podcast as well. It's good if people subscribe, because then obviously know when the next one is coming out.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and it's helpful for us to get, a sense of how many people are listening. And yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
So, Graham, then, what would you say was the event that you enjoyed the most this year?
I would say just the events on August the 9th, I suppose. Because it did seem to encapsulate the whole point of the year, really. It was, this was the day. And there were so many memorable parts to it. You had the whole truck finding home, which I thought was terrific and a great example of what Vicky was talking about earlier, about the way in which Larkin can prompt creativity.
Yeah.
And looking around that audience, it was good to see different ages. It wasn't just the old Larkin Society generation that it turned out. It was a different set, and gives you great hope for the future. And then in the evening, of course, Simon Armitage is a terrific performer, and some of the people I talked to afterwards were surprised that he was so funny.
Yeah.
I always associate him with humour, and so I got that poetic wit which shines through, I think. And then the kind of gala meal afterwards was unusual, and threw together different people around different tables, and felt like a successful wedding in the end.
what are your reflections on that day, Vicky?
On the 9th of August?
Yeah.
It was just from start to finish. I actually wrote a column about it for the whole story, because
that's really good.
It felt like after almost 18 months at that point, I'd been involved and been through such an up and down of, is anything going to happen? Are we going to get funding? Is everywhere going to be open? Like, because of the pandemic and stuff. That actually, I remember us just grinning at each other, the three of us, when we got to Hull Truck and met up on that day. And, the whole day was just amazing, from getting up in the morning and hearing Petro Trelawney talking about Larkin on his Radio 3 breakfast show, and then reading various articles that appeared that day, and then just everybody coming together at Hull Truck, and then the difference between that and Simon Armitage on that night. Like, I've met him quite a few times and seen him perform, but that night it was like he'd gone up another gear. It was just it was just brilliant. And then Tom Courtney reading Larkin's poetry while we waited for our ice cream was like sitting around a table with him, Tiaz Darker and Simon Armitage. It's just, you know, it was just such a special day. And again, I think, again, it comes back to that whole thing I was talking about earlier of people just being there because they've got a genuine warmth and affection and a connection to Larkin's poetry. It's moved them and they feel compelled that if something like that's happening, yeah, they want to be there, they want to be part of it. I think that's, yeah, the whole day was just, it's just brilliant. But for me as well, I think I also, it was a different kind of day, but the 2nd of December in Westminster Abbey was a really special event for me as well. And it's that those two events, I think, kind of bookend the year for me. And the, and that was special in a different way. It was a different tone, but like for the Dean of Westminster Abbey to invite us into his private chambers and stay as a Larkin fan and have this, you know, give this little talk about, you know, what Larkin's opinion of his position was and talk about religion and stuff was really, again, that's just like another angle on the diversity of people that feel connected to Larkin and the, you know, the places the places that he and his work lead to. That was a really special in there as well.
The 9th of August was lovely for me to be able to meet people face to face that I'd only ever spoken to online before. And it was lovely to meet Wes Finch and the Mechanicals and to hear them actually play our music on stage. That was just excellent. But yeah, it was lovely to meet Wes and to meet quite a lot of members of the Philip Larkin Society, again, who I knew either they'd emailed or, you know, been part of the podcast. And obviously to meet people on the night like Imtiaz and Simon Armitage and Tom Courtney and just people that I didn't even know who was coming. And, you know, to talk to Daniel Wayne about his play that was in rehearsal at that point. As you say, Vicky, so many different aspects of Larkin that came out that night and we were able to talk to people about was, yeah, it was a really, really magical day. I didn't have any involvement with the organisation of it, but I just thought it was a brilliant day. And I went away very happy that night, back to the hotel. It was great.
I think MTS's performance at that whole chock event in Finding Home, I mean, one of the really positive things, really great things about that is that MTS wrote a poem about Larkin, which we'd asked her to do, which just captured everything we'd want from that, you know, that swiping left, it's called, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just the whole notion of how Larkin would have been viewed if he'd been on social media nowadays.
Yeah.
And that the poetry wins through at the end. That was a highlight for me of that event, I think.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the right back in April, the Alliance of Literary Societies, when we had the our AGM in Hull at the History Centre. And we sort of badged that as the first event, didn't we, for Larkin 100? And it was great because so many people came that had never been to Hull before. I think that was a real kind of theme of the day, of the weekend, visiting Hull for the first time. And the excitement that people showed, just being able to get to the library, to go to the Minerva pub and to see the estuary and just to, you know, kind of immerse themselves in Hull was really fantastic. I really enjoyed that day. And, yeah, the conference that we've just had has been, you know, a lot of organisations, like a lot of organising, like every conference is, but it just went so well. And I feel like we've got a template now. And I hope anybody listening that feels like, you know, they want to come up to Hull, I'm sure we'll be doing one maybe next year, maybe the year after. But I think those in-person conferences, we need to keep doing them.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah. Graham, is there anything else you want to reflect on the year?
I suppose the one of the anxieties that we had leading up to the year was the extent to which Larkin would get caught up in culture wars. And by and large, that's not happened. There was the taking off the OCR syllabus caused a little bit of a conflagration, I guess, in whenever it was, June, July, where it became a bit of a battleground. But you, Lynn, and I were involved in one or two radio interviews. I suppose my proudest moment of the year is having turned down Nigel Farage for an interview. Because it was the expectation of both Lynn and I think, was that we would be outraged. And what they were interested in was the outrage. And that they didn't get that either from Lynn or myself. And that, I think, calmly just kind of doused some of the flames that were never going to last very long anyway. But that's just one incident. And I mean, a lot of the writings on Larkin, some in New Statements, some in Spectator and so on, I think they by and large dealt with the greatness of the poetry. And the editorial in The Guardian, which came late, you know, it wasn't in the week of the anniversary itself. I think it came in September even. But that struck me as perhaps one of the most significant highlights of the year. That given their general political stance and their keenness to not remain silent in the culture wars, it was, I think, terrific. And I'd assume that Rachel Cook had written it, but she tells me she didn't. And she doesn't know who did. So somewhere in the editorial room at The Guardian, we have another Larkin fan, because it was very well measured and done. So, and I think, you know, the conference, one or two papers openly talked about council culture, and Rachel herself and Jim Orwin to a degree. But they did it in an extremely interesting way, and they had a particular perspective from Rachel as a journalist. I remember discussing around the table at the Larkin Society that we perhaps ought to have a press statement ready for to explain our position. And we more or less had a response, but we didn't need it. And it's terrific to me that people have been focusing largely on, in the written word anyway, on Larkin's The Poet. I mean, there's the fascination about Larkin the man, but it never got heated, I think, in any real sense.
No, I think you're right. I think the focus was on the poetry, and I feel like I've learned so much more about the poetry. And I mean, like, looking ahead, one of the things I think I've really learned about, and I think I hope we continue to develop, is the influence of Belfast on Larkin's work. I mean, to me, that was just a revelation, and your visit to Belfast, Phil, was just really kind of kickstarted that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I was sort of picking out my highlights of the year, I would have two of them, and they would be one of them's Belfast and the other one is Sark. And they're kind of related because, I mean, I always use those as sort of flags I wanted to put in the ground, really, to say we're going to take Larkin to every Larkin place, and that would be Sark and Belfast as key ones. And partly because they'd really not been visited before, from a Larkin angle. And we were incredibly lucky, I think, with a visit we did to the Guernsey Literary Festival, where I talked about Larkin's holidays on in the Channel Islands, because he also went to Jersey on an occasion, and obviously he'd travelled into Guernsey. But it was Sark I focused on, and to actually have a little holiday in Sark after that, in glorious weather, and just to wander around the island and just try and imagine what it was like for Larkin to be. I made a video about that, which I haven't put together yet, but it kind of was as I expected and not. I've forgotten that the whole world is joined together now by things like Sky Sports in every pub, and that wouldn't have been the case in Larkin's day. So my idea of this, kind of place he went to would be just as it was in terms of the pubs he went to and so on, wasn't quite right. And the day trippers were just like day trippers anywhere else. But there was something at the heart of it that was still the same. That was fantastic. And then Belfast, yeah. Great to be involved with the Belfast International Arts Festival. To have a chance also to kind of wander around. But Belfast is a great city. I've been there once before, and it was just a fabulous place to be. And everything was good. But it's also, though, as well as being a high point of the year, and that contact with Belfast will continue because we're planning to do a Belfast walk next year, which would be great. It was a low point, too, because I managed to effect Larkin's fantastic collapse at a library committee meeting myself whilst delivering my talk at the festival, which was unfortunate. But we did video it afterwards. We did video the talk. So, and I have to say, the people I met in Belfast, including those who were there to look after me that night, the volunteers from the festival, were just absolutely fantastic. And we will be back. I think we've definitely got a flag out in Belfast now, and and working with Hugh Odling Smee. Of course, we did the podcast together. Hugh was fantastic too, and I'm sure we'll be working with him next year and doing more things in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, he's a great source of knowledge about all kinds of literature in Belfast, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
Film and all kinds of arts. He was fascinating. Yeah. And be good to get over to Belfast more. And looking ahead to next year then, or the next few years, we've talked quite a lot about education and turning our focus really to supporting some kind of more educational engagement really. I'm kind of hoping that if we do run an academic conference next year, we can get some more direct links with undergraduates, postgraduates, and get them to come along and give papers and get involved, because they really are the future of Larkin studies and in the academic world. So that would be really good for me. And possibly we've talked a long while about putting together getting some more links back with schools, particularly in the Hull area. And we used to have really good links with schools and colleges, and that's kind of receded a little bit. And I think we've all thought that would be a nice thing to do. Larkin is really very accessible to younger readers, and especially with the poems about animals, for example, and nature. I'm hoping that we can do more of that kind of thing. Vicky, what are your plans, Larkin related plans?
So at the moment I'm actually teaching a first story, delivering a first story creative writing program at Longcroft School in Beverley, and that's something that I do quite a lot of, running workshops. And I think for me, different elements of Larkin's work and actually elements of Larkin's process, I've been so fascinated looking through his workbooks this year. It's like it's such a beautiful thing to me to see, to actually, I'm so glad that he kept those workbooks and that he kept them in order and he worked in the way that he did, because like I presented about here at the conference, to sit down and see the stages that the poem goes through, where it starts and where it ends up, is, you know, just such a fascinating thing for me. And so I think I've got ideas about that circulating in my head, which I've already spoken to Philip and Graham about. I think there's things we can work on. One of the things we wanted to do this year and we've not actually managed to do was putting together a resource pack for schools. And I know we've discussed the possibility of creating something like that before the year's out or in the new year. That's kind of a legacy of Larkin 100. So that would be, that would be something to look at. But I'm also, you've just figured it again in my mind, Lynn, talking about people coming to Hull for the AGM and really wanting to visit the Minerva and look at the estuary and stuff. Like, for me, that's something that's really stood out this year, because obviously I know Hull first as my place. It wasn't until I was like 17 that I discovered it was also Larkin's place. And so I've sort of held those two things in my mind. Like, the, his images of Hull have been, I now realise, have been so important to me, and the fact that he lived here. So I think there's more to do around that. I'm really interested in that idea now. And also, like, I'd been totally oblivious. I knew about Douglas Dunn, but I didn't know much about Sean O'Brien and Peter Didsbury. And I've found out so much this year about the kind of the other strands of writing that have grown out of Hull. And you know, for me, I think what I've learned this year is that Larkin is kind of at the centre of that. So, yeah, I've got a lot of different swirling ideas at the moment. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah,
not sure what's going to happen with them, but
it's a nice place to be, though, isn't it? When you've got lots of ideas and
there's definitely more. I feel like there's definitely more I'd like to do. I feel like there's more I'd like to write about it as well. I really enjoyed working with Esther Johnson to write that paper for the conference. So I feel like there's more I want to say, because I'm really interested in placemaking, you know, how our sense of place and our sense of ourselves in a place. And, you know, it's become apparent to me this year that Larkin has been really important in that for me personally, but obviously for loads of other people as well who wanted to come to Hull and, you know, and love his poems. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And Graham, looking ahead, any...
I just to pick up the education theme, I'm interested in how we can make available digitally material that would be of interest both to students and teachers in the age range of 15 to 30. The model I mentioned the other day about this journal called Antigone, which focuses on the classics, who promise and seem to have kept their promise to deliver 3 articles a week. So in your email box on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you get an article on the some aspects of the Greco-Roman world. Now, that's a massive undertaking, so it wouldn't be anything as close to that frequency. But I was really interested in the way they say that their target audience is 15 to 30, and they want articles written focusing on that 15 to 30, so that they'd be readable. And it ties in so closely with what Lynn was saying earlier about opening up some of the education strands and what Vicky was saying about her work in Longcroft, because it's patently in the society's self-interest to cultivate the next generation, not necessarily of members, although you'd think it might have a spin-off and increasing, but in promoting Larkin's work and carrying it on to the future. So I think my mind has been changed over the year, where we thought we might have a full-blown academic journal, and that's hit some obstacles, I suppose, to, well, yeah, just looking at something that's still academic in the sense it's education, but aimed at a particular audience. I'd love to explore that more. And what else would I like? Again, picking up on something that Vicky said, and we haven't got a Larkin Trail film. We you know, I'm looking at some of the Cummings Your Way catalogues, which are so entertaining, and they did a very good job on commentary, particularly on and it's, I think, with Larkin, there's a lovely film about Hull as well, but it wasn't specific to Larkin. It's asking to be done somehow,
It was on the books for this year, actually, and we didn't get around to it. It certainly would be valuable to engage different people in each part of the trail, was my view of that.
I mean, it goes from Blacktoft to Spurn and north to Beverley. It should engage East Riding Council and Hull City Council. I was talking to Rick Welton yesterday about the one at Spurn. They've not been to Spurn for a while, and we know it's changing shape. And he said that there are two plaques, actually, at Spurn, one pointing to where the other one is, and it's on the, probably the wrong term, breakwater, and it's rusting nicely in the sea. That'd be another thing. I suppose this is not so much legacy of the centenary, because of what we've been talking about, and that's geographically and the diversity of people interested in Larkin. It made me think that it would be no bad idea just to do a survey, I suppose, of what members and perhaps others would expect from a literary society with regard to Larkin. And I don't think we've done one. We've had a kind of member Zoom meeting, but those have been kind of great, informal, social. But it may be time to ask people. So, because I quoted Don Lee saying that literary societies will have to change shape in the 21st century. And I think we're already finding that we've changed shape. We used just to be a few meetings in Hull and a journal twice a year. If you look at what we offer now, it's unrecognizable. And so that's within 25 years. But I think Don had something else in mind, that how do you get to, I mean, I've understood it. I've not talked in detail with him, but you know, we talk about the number of subscribers or followers, Instagram followers, people who subscribe to our electronic newsletter, about 1,000 of those, where our membership is about 370. So is there a model that could somehow encompass those different levels of engagement, but still call ourselves a literary society? And I'd like to explore that next year.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned Don Lee Graham there, really, because I think we ought to acknowledge his role in various parts of the year from a distance, in a sense, because he hasn't been able to join us in the way he would have liked to. Don, of course, was the key person for initially developing the Larkin Walks, which have taken place in most Larkin-related places. And I've followed that model with some I've done this year, but also in promoting the idea of a Larkin plaque on Larkin's birthplace in Coventry. Don has been sort of asking for that for many years, and was instrumental in getting it done this year, wasn't he? So
yeah.
I just wanted to just pay a bit of a tribute to Don, as well as a long-standing, well, ex-trustee now, but committee member of the Larkin Society, for all the work he's done. And he's been a great inspiration to us, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Talking about legacy, I mean, that plaque in Coventry is a good example of it. But then we now have a centenary bench in Old General Cemetery, which is another example of people getting on with it and recognising the centenary. And you only find out about it sometime in October or something. And then there's the centenary bench in Pearson Park Conservatory, which, again, these physical legacies, like the Larkin Trail, like the toads, do serve a purpose. And the statue, of course.
I had an interesting conversation with Matthew Sweet in Westminster Abbey about Larkin's statue, and we were talking about the way things like that, stuff that's in public places, the way it gets kind of incorporated into people's consciousness. And, like, you know, even people who might not know Larkin is will know about that statue. It takes on a different kind of meaning for people. I think it could be easy maybe for some people to dismiss that kind of thing, but actually the fact that it's there and so many people see it every day becomes important. It takes on a meaning of its own, I think.
Thank you so much to Vicky, Phil and Graham. It was so lovely to look back on the year together and also start thinking about the new year ahead. And I hope we can get Vicky back on the podcast sometime soon as well. This podcast was produced by Simon Galloway, and the opening music is The Horns of the Morning by The Mechanicals Band. And as ever, if you have any comments or any suggestions, I love hearing from you, so please get in touch.
Horns of the morning are blowing, are shining. The meadow is wet with the coldest of June.